reality, grief, and hope. The theologian Walter Brueggemann talks about three urgent prophetic tasks: reality, the red, grief, the yellow, and hope, the green. These will be my three sections of this post-election sermon. Reality. Many people in the country and the world right now are in deep pain and fear over the election of Donald Trump. This pain and fear is not just about Republican versus Democrat or independent, not just about having lost an election. It's about the reality that about half of voters chose a candidate who has encouraged and advocated racism, misogyny, and xenophobia, things that go against our Unitarian Universalist principles. But regardless of whether Trump had won, we would be living with the reality that he had already emboldened huge portions of the population to be unapologetic in their bigotry. Now that he has won, people, it seems, feel particularly emboldened and justified. Hate crimes have been spiking all over the country. I'm going to give just a few examples of these hate crimes because I want to make sure we clearly see the reality. Because we might be tempted to say, how bad could it be? Or let's just wait and see what happens. To that I respond, it is bad, it is real, and it is already happening. For those of you who are already painfully aware of these realities, feel free to tune me out for this part. Or even to leave the room, seriously, if you need to. Or you might practice the five senses activity that trauma survivors are often taught to practice. Counselors across the country have been talking about trauma survivors being re-triggered during this election. This five senses activity is to pay attention to your breathing and find five things in this moment that you see, feel, hear, taste, and smell. This practice assures your brain that this moment is safe, even though other moments have not been safe. My intention is not to cause more despair for those already despairing, but to help all of us see one big part of our reality. So here's just a few examples of the many that have been recorded. At a school in Pennsylvania on Wednesday, students chanted, cotton picker, you're a nigger, Heil Hitler. At NYU, the door of the Muslim Student Association's prayer room was defaced with the word Trump scrawled in permanent black marker. In a college dorm room, a student left a note for her roommate. It said, "Hey, Maria, Trump won. So here's a little preview of what is to come. Hashtag wall, love Izzy." Maria found down the center of their shared room a wall made of shoes, hangers, and books. A sign placed on a car in North Carolina said, "Can't wait until your, quote, marriage is overturned by a real president. Gay families burn in hell. Hashtag Trump 2016, hashtag repent, hashtag God bless." An Asian woman at a gas station said a man yelled at her, "We won, now get the out of my country." A woman at Walmart said to a woman in a hijab, "This is not allowed anymore, so go hang yourself with it around your neck, not on your head." Many, many reports of women being grabbed by. A woman at Starbucks said, "I set up my computer and received a FaceTime call from a deaf friend. This guy came marching up to me and got up in my face, saying, "This is white America now. Take your retarded self and go somewhere else. Trump is president now." The reports go on and on. And they haven't all been verbal like this. There's been physical violence, too. And yes, there has been violence toward Trump supporters as well. But the truth is that Trump is not the cause, but the symptom. This ignorance and hatred was already present. It will now, unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately, be even more blatant and rampant. Our country has been undergoing a time of rapid and immense social change. We have been taking huge steps forward in terms of greater diversity and inclusion. And now fear has caused many of us to want to take a huge step backward. People are also fearing the policies of the Trump administration, aided by a very conservative House and Senate. So this is still in the reality section. People are afraid of mass deportations, rights stripped from LGBTQ people, increased difficulty finding health care, especially for those with disabilities, astounding steps backwards in terms of climate change, strained and uncertain relationships with other countries, further losses in reproductive rights, possible economic recession, and more. And these are just the ones that people seem to be perhaps legitimately afraid of, not the big conspiracy theory. This election has also revealed many people's deep distrust of our political system. Half of our country didn't vote, probably for many different reasons. I know that some of you didn't vote, mostly for reasons of conscience. And as Unitarian Universalists, we have our right of conscience. Perhaps because you don't believe in government. Perhaps because you couldn't vote in good conscience for any of the candidates. Many are deeply and rightly disappointed in the power of corporation in politics, in the two-party system, in corruption and deceit, in the compromises made by progressives, in the influence of the media, in the ways people place too much power in politicians and not enough power in their own hands. Many analysts are arguing that many Trump supporters were just plain fed up, perhaps rightly so, with the elitism of politics, and they wanted some kind of change no matter what. We are in a rough place. But the truth is, we have always been in this rough place. It is now simply more visible to all of us, if we look. The poor Black woman has probably always been aware of it. The transgender woman has probably always been aware of it. The undocumented teenager has always been aware of it. Many of us have been protected from these realities by the color of our skin, or by our income, or by our education, or our gender, or our sexual orientation. And the truth is, some of us will continue to be protected from this reality. The poet David White wrote, "Sometimes we have to make a complete and absolute disaster of our lives in such an epic, unavoidable way so that it can suddenly become absolutely clear to us what we have been doing all along." I believe this is where our country is now. If Hillary Clinton had been the one to edge out Donald Trump, all of these underlying issues would still be present. Perhaps they'd be less blatant, but either way, there is still white supremacy at the root, at the founding of our country, and it's unresolved. There's sexism, there's xenophobia, there's classism, there's corruption, there's apathy, there's dysfunction. And where we are now is at a threshold. The divisiveness of this election, the shock for many of the results, has put our country at a threshold. Threshold is an interesting word. As you know, it's that part that you walk over as you pass through a doorway. It's also that part, that point at which something begins or changes. The word is derived from the word thresh, which means to separate the seed from the husk for harvest. The Irish writer John O'Donohue says, "The threshold, in a way, is a place where you move into more critical and challenging and worthy fullness." And I think there are huge thresholds in every life, he says. A very simple example, if you're in the middle of your life on a busy evening, 50 things to do, and you get a phone call that somebody you love is dying, it takes 10 seconds to communicate that information. But when you put the phone down, you're already standing in a different world. Because suddenly everything that seemed so important before is all gone, and now you're thinking of this. So the given world that we think is there, and the solid ground we're on, is so tentative, he says. A threshold is a line which separates two territories of spirit. And I think that very often, how we cross is the key thing. So especially for those of us in despair and in shock over this election, and for those of us in denial or apathy, I think how we cross this threshold is the key thing. And this is where we arrive at the second section of the sermon, grief. What I mean here by grief is to allow ourselves, to ask ourselves, to sit with whatever arises in us related to this election, even if it's boredom or apathy. To resist the inclination to shut down or to check out or to shift too quickly into analysis or action. For some of us, that might mean turning off the news for a bit, shutting off our need to absorb or process information because it might be distracting us from the heart of the matter. We might need to listen to the anger that will eventually activate us, the grief that will inform us, the fear that will inspire us. For some of us, we may need to turn on the news or seek out different news. We may need to find stories of how this election is affecting the marginalized. We may need to let our protected hearts be broken just a bit. Because a broken heart is one aware of interconnectedness, capable of action. So if you haven't already done so this week, give yourself permission to, for example, vent your anger to a friend who really gets it. Or let yourself curl up in the fetal position. Or sit in meditation with your fears. Or pray prayers of lamentation. The better we can be fully present with our responses, the more naturally we will move without effort to the next step. Hope. So here are three ways, I think, to find hope. Through reflection, through faith, and through action. Hope through reflection. This is the time to search for any bit of common ground we can find with those of different political persuasions. I promise you, there is common ground somewhere. If we ask truly honest, open questions, and we listen. Through reflection, we find more of ourselves and others than we could have imagined. Hope through faith. Any actions we take must be grounded in faith. That word doesn't mean much to you. Think of it in terms of your deepest values, your ultimate concerns. Perhaps your faith is that love always wins, that love always prevails over hate, and you tie yourself to that. Or perhaps your faith is that sometimes love doesn't win, but we go out loving, and in that way, love does win. Hope through action. One of the best ways to find hope is to do something. Do something outside your comfort zone. The greater your social privilege, the more risk you might take. Rebecca Solnit wrote, "Hope is an axe you break down doors with in an emergency. Hope should shove you out the door because it will take everything you have to steer the future away from endless war, from the annihilation of the earth's treasures and the grinding down of the poor and the marginal. Hope just means another world might be possible, not promised, not guaranteed. Hope calls for action. Action is impossible without hope." So last Sunday, this church, your church, was called to action. We had a planning retreat. Some of you were there. The board members, several committee chairs, and I gathered with Natalie Briscoe from the Unitarian Universalist Association, whom we brought here to help us with the two main goals we had identified for the church for the year: growth and financial sustainability. But you know what? We didn't end up talking much about growth and financial sustainability. And that's not because it was a bad retreat. She asked us a series of questions about our church. She looked around and she said, "You know, you guys are good. You're a healthy church with a beautiful building, a good mission statement, a core of committed volunteers, a newly called minister. We could spend a bunch of time on technical approaches that would help you think about how to grow and how to run your next stewardship campaign. But the biggest thing," she said, "that keeps churches from growing is that they look inward. They don't move beyond their walls to actually do the work of the church in the community." And she didn't mean just that we as individuals go out and do the work, but that we as a church, as Unitarian Universalists in Midland, do the work. Natalie challenged us. What if you pick one ministry that you will do in this community for the next few years, and you go do it? If you do that, I bet your goals around growth and financial sustainability will solve themselves. Basically, she's saying, if you go and be a church, everything else will take care of itself. With some